Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com here with Scott Eklund, and we are inside Husky Stadium again in the media room, the smaller media room today on Friday. Was thinking, ideally, Scott, that we were going to be seeing a little bit of stuff today, but that they were going to be maybe saving some of their stuff for Saturday's, what we thought was going to be a scrimmage. But as it turned out, we just got done talking to Kalen DeBoer, and he told us that they did like a 75 to 80 play right. scrimmage yep. today, which we actually saw five plays of, the first five plays, and that they will not be going full pads on Saturday. So yep. I don't know if that's going to affect fans' enthusiasm or their interest in coming out to see practice. But he did still intimate that there's going to be a lot of periods. It's going to be a full two-hour practice. There's going to be a lot of maybe some one-on-one, some 11-on-11 situations.
And 7-on-7.
And 7-on-7 situations. But right now, we were under the impression the scrimmage was going to happen Saturday, but actually the scrimmage happened today.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw him in full pads today, I was like, oh, yeah, they must be scrimmaging today because the full contingent of officials were
yeah,
out there too.
Yeah, because it's usually so. Flipped, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So I had a feeling we probably weren't going to see a full-on scrimmage tomorrow, but it will be good to at least see 11-on-11 and who's running with what and making plays and doing some different things. But it's not going to be a full contact scrimmage or anything like that.
Yeah, and just to let people know, I will be putting out something later tonight, available either very late tonight or first thing in the morning, that will give people an idea of kind of a two-deeps, the names and numbers to watch out for. Mm-hmm. That comes with a huge caveat, like about 10 asterisks, because I asked mm-hmm. I asked DeBoer right off the bat, because we were under the impression it was going to be a scrimmage. So I said, for the fans, who can you tell us who will not be available that you're holding yep. out? Because they held out a lot of guys for last Friday's scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And he kind of chuckled and said, that's really a difficult question, because first of all, we scrimmaged today. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to probably be doing the same things we did then.
But he also said that there might be some guys who are dinged up from the scrimmage.
He mentioned Jordan Perryman. He mentioned guys like Henry Bainavalu. I mean, there were some guys that weren't mm-hmm. there today that we didn't see, that we, you know, I would have probably anticipated may not have been mm-hmm. available for a scrimmage Saturday. They were there today. Mm-hmm. My hunch, because we didn't see them come out with the ones, yep. was that they were probably held out today as well. Mm-hmm. I think they're, I wouldn't say they're on tender hooks. I don't know how to characterize it, but they're definitely being very cautious about what they're doing with their guys, because we did get to see some live tackling for the first time all spring, and I don't know if that was something that yeah. we were supposed to catch five plays and then go inside, but we got to see some guys make a couple plays. It was nice to see, but you know, we have no idea how many guys yeah. are banged up and are hurting simply because of how much time they may have scrimmaged yeah. outside of what we've gotten to see.
And DeBoer also mentioned that there was some sickness going around. He goes, not COVID.
Yes, not COVID.
He made sure to say it's not COVID.
Underline that yeah. three times yeah. with exclamation
and
points.
Put it in red yes. that it's not COVID. But, I mean, I'm dealing with a cold,
yeah.
you know, and that's gone around my family. There's been a stomach
There's
bug
always seasonal allergies
around. Yeah.
In the spring.
There's been a stomach bug going yeah. around, too. So there might be, like, Nate Kaleppa wasn't at practice today at all.
Yeah.
And is that because he was sick, or was that because he's injured? We don't know.
Right.
But he's
been around.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's been hurt.
No. Gearon Hatchett took his spot with the first team at left tackle. At left guard. And so that's just... You know, tomorrow when they come and they line up, Kaleppa may be out there. He may not. So that's worth keeping an eye on. But yeah. Who are there? I mean, Mark.
Jacoby Covington was a guy on defense.
Covington
I didn't
was
see
also
today.
Not there. Yep. Carson Bruner has still, even though he's been out there running
yeah.
around,
yeah.
he hasn't been. Cam Bright and Tupitala are the ones taking the reps with the ones, and DeMario King and.
Daniel Heymouli
were the ones taken with the
team. And I've even seen Fowler come in from time to time. So it's, even though he's doing a lot of the individual stuff, I think the point we want to make sure to underscore is that these guys are getting a lot of work in, but when there's team periods or things like that, there are some guys that we would expect to be starters or really important two-deep guys that are being held out. Mm-hmm. And so don't read anything more into that other than they're clearly being held out for various precautions or, like you said, they could be sick, you know, what have you. So there's, again, letting people know that this two-deep is going to be out, but it should be taken with a massive grain of salt. Mm-hmm. But it is based on the guys that we've seen the most.
Yep.
Because I think you mentioned even in the last podcast, Scott, that when you look at those front lines, front sevens for both sides of the line of scrimmage, they really have not altered all that much.
No, not at all.
Just the occasional guy, like you said, you know, a guy like Hatchett comes in for Kaleppo, or sometimes if you're looking at the front seven defensively, you have to determine whether or not the nickel is in or whether they go heavy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just some different things that are going on. But basically speaking, the two deeps on those front lines have been really very similar.
Well, there was that day that Mele was taking reps at the center.
Right.
And Roger Rosengarten was the one taking right tackle reps.
Yeah, and I've even seen, I saw some of the offensive line today, they were doing some stuff, and in the tackle group was Parker Brailsford.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I don't know if I had seen him actually working in tackles at all. Most of the spring.
He's an interior guy, typically.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that was done just to fill the numbers for that particular drill. Again, just to underscore a lot of movement going on, a lot of other things. But I will be putting out that list later tonight as kind of a guidepost for people, and with numbers, too. So you can look at number, and because there's going to be a lot of changes, too, because people may not realize that Dominique Hampton is 7 now instead of 21.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's another one? Fabio Kilonen is 13 now instead of 31.
And Romo Dunsey. And Romo Dunsey is 1 instead of 16.
16, exactly. So. And then Giles Jackson went from 0 to 8 to 0.
Yeah.
So again, no judgment at all. But sometimes these things are hard to track.
Yeah.
Sometimes, just to let you guys know as well, there were a bunch of things going on today. They didn't have a ton of recruits out today. Some of the FSP guys were out today. A little smaller contingent that we saw. I think you saw Jurion Dickey was here.
Yep, he's a wide receiver out of East Palo Alto, four-star guy. That one of the higher rated receivers that Washington has a pretty good shot with.
Yep. So. And then Kalen DeBoer went and spoke to a bunch of people. They had kind of a corporate outing in the Touchdown Terraces. Sonny Sixkiller was really involved. Got a chance to talk and catch up with Sonny a little bit. It's always good to talk to him.
Well, we were wondering if that was an NIL thing.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, it's not. It's just something that they were doing corporate.
Yeah.
It's which, you know, they're
sponsorships.
Sometimes it's hard to tell how these things kind of mix and
nowadays,
match. Nowadays, they all kind of bleed into each other. But he made a point to say it had nothing to do with NIL. And then there was former coaches again. Coach Baird, Coach Hart were again out at practice today, which I find interesting. That's good. I mean, Baird has been always never present the last handful of years, but Coach Hart, obviously coming back to the area, he's been to a lot of practices this spring. And then we saw Johnny DeRocher.
About half of them at least that I remember for Hart.
Yeah, and then we saw Johnny DeRocher, former Washington quarterback, who's now coaching receivers at PLU. He got roped into doing some college coaching. So good on Johnny, and it'll be good to catch up with him. Obviously, he'll be right front and center at the PLU camp at the end of June. I'm sure we'll have a bunch of guys down there for that.
Mm-hmm. One thing that people need to know, too, is Johnny DeRocher worked a lot with Dylan Morris.
Yeah.
And when he was...
And he was talking with Dylan in his, and whatnot after practice a little bit.
So... You know, Johnny did a lot before Reggie Jones kind of came in and took over. Or I guess Reggie Jones left.
Yeah.
And
At Air?
At Air. Yeah. And then I can't remember exactly how it all worked out, but Johnny kind of took over for Reggie for a while. And
he was certainly involved.
Dylan Morris was his
quarterback,
and so he worked a lot with him and has a really good relationship with that family. So
let's go into a couple of things that Coach DeBoer said after practice. Again, we talked about the major scrimmage was today, 75-80 plays is what he said. They won't be in full pads on Saturday, but you know, just a couple of spotlighted things because people asked. You asked for the callouts, the Friday callouts.
Uh-huh.
And
he didn't do any today.
And he said it was interesting because, they were going to save those for tomorrow. But he did say that he's been really impressed. And he said throughout the interview that the edge players have really impressed him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And You know, Jeremiah Martin, Braylon Trice, Savelle Smalls, Zion Tupuola-Fatui. Those are the four guys that we see when we watch practice because we usually only see the first two teams. Hasn't mentioned Jordan Olohea, how he's coming along. Has not really mentioned, you know, some of the other guys. Maurice Himes got a few reps in there with the ones one time, but he hasn't gotten any, you know, the coach hasn't really talked much about him. Or anything, but he said those guys are causing some problems off the edge right now. They're causing some problems, good problems. Good problems for the defense, bad problems for the offense, right? And just said all, listed all four of those guys as all making plays right now. Savelle Smalls, Zion Tupuola-Fatui with the twos, and then Braylon Trice and Jeremiah Martin with the ones.
And so, of course, with the coaching hat on, as he always does, you know, I'm wondering, he didn't say this specifically or spell it out, but Chris Peterson used to talk about this all the time. When those guys are doing really, really well, does that mean the tackles are struggling? And, of course, now you're thinking, you know, Jackson Kirkland, he may come back. Still no word on what his waiver request is. But when you have Troy Fautanu there, you've got Victor Kern, who's now moved inside. So you have Mateo Mele, who's getting full reps out there now outside. Are you
Henry Bainavalu could screw that all up.
But so, are you seeing maybe some benefits to the edge guys because they're going up against guys that
might not
wouldn't
be
have
there?
Been, well, they wouldn't be as experienced clearly as Kern and Kirkland in an ideal situation? Because I think if you would have given fans a hypothetical and said, hey, the first game of the 2022 season, what are the odds that Jackson Kirkland, if he gets the waiver request, is your left tackle and Vic Kern is your right tackle, I think he'd probably get 100%. Now it's looking like 50-50 at best. Because you're only really talking about the left side with Kirkland. And who knows what's going to happen with that. And then obviously they've made a very deliberate move with moving Kern inside and having Mele outside. And Mele is a guy who's experienced. Don't get me wrong, but his start that he's had in his college career was at center, as you mentioned. So right tackle could still be something that he's working into.
Or Henry Bainavalu could be that guy, you know, at tackle and leave Kern inside. So I don't know. I mean, I really am. That's one of the more intriguing off-season, like summer things that I'm going to be looking for. And when we get into fall camp, what does the first offensive line look like? Because it could look completely different than what we see now. It sounds like Corey Luciano has had a really one thing that DeBoer did say today was that Corey Luciano and Troy Fautanu have been the most consistent guys along the offensive line all spring long, and he's been really happy with how they've played.
And then another guy, Julius Pulo. I mean, is he a guy that could float either left or right? Because he's been really on the left side for this spring. But again, and then Roger Rosengarten was a guy that we saw get time at times on both sides, both tackles last year. But he's really been a right-sided player this year. Does he factor in now? All of a sudden, does he move into maybe contention to be that number one right tackle?
Well, and one thing that we should ask Scott Huff about next week when we get a chance to talk to him and or Coach DeBoer is what does – because you have two left-handed quarterbacks as your possibilities and one who we think, at least at this point in time, who is probably your starter or at least the – odds-on favorite to be the starter, and Michael Penix, they're left-handed, and Sam Heward's left-handed. Are you putting guys who normally would be left tackles for you with a right-handed quarterback, are you moving them to the right tackle spot, or are you just leaving them how you normally would and saying, this is the guy, these are the guys we're going to run out here, regardless of who our quarterback is?
And I think it's a good shot with Bainavalu, Scott, because if you really took a poll in the last couple of years, a lot of guys would say the most athletic overall lineman on the front five is Bainavalu when he's healthy. And of course, we didn't think he was coming back because his health was a concern. But now that apparently he's on his way back and looks like he's going to be available, even though it has been a little hit and miss. And again, could that be because
he's out practicing?
But is that because they're deliberately trying to bring him along a little slower so that he's ready to go in the fall? Or is he suffering some setbacks? We just don't know.
I don't know.
But when it comes to the most athletic guy out there, you might want to put the most athletic guy out there on the right-hand side if you're protecting that left-handed quarterback's blind side.
Yeah, so it's going to be real interesting. I mean, there, you know, it's, you know, we always say these are interesting or whatever, but the position battles can always kind of work themselves out. The running back room, I think, is going to be real interesting to watch how that thing
progresses. We are going to address that in a second.
But the offensive line group, man, I just I don't know. I mean, you could be looking at five. Other than center, because it sounds like Luciano has really kind of shored up that spot.
He certainly has gotten the number one, the massive amount of number one reps.
But I think the other four spots are all going to look, could look completely different when we're talking about the start of fall camp in early August.
Right.
I mean, it could just look totally different. Kirkland could be at left tackle. Where's Troy Fa'utanu? I mean, Coach DeBoer said it himself today. He's played himself into a position where we're going to find a place for him on the field.
He would be your left guard.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
But do we know? What if Nate Kaleppo's playing really well there? Or Garen Hatchett when he gets a chance?
Well, what about the coaching dilemma where you're Scott Huff and you know probably you have the best five, maybe if you put Kirkland out to the right against with the left-handed quarterback, but you also are weighing that against the idea that he's probably a left tackle at the next level.
Yeah.
And why is he back?
See, I personally think Kirkland is a guard at the next level.
Well, it could be.
But in college, he can play tackle, and he has played right guard, so the footwork isn't that much different for him at right tackle.
So are you suggesting there's a potential that they keep Troy Fa'utanu at left tackle and move Kirkland inside?
Yeah. No, I think there's a potential that Fa'utanu is your left tackle.
That's what I'm saying. And then you move Kirkland inside.
No, Kirkland is on the right side.
Okay.
At right tackle.
Because I'm saying if you do feel that way, if you think he's an interior player in the NFL, he's always, I mean, yes, he played right guard his first year. Like, he had that start
first two
against
years.
Auburn and whatnot. So he has the potential of playing on that side, no doubt. Uh-huh. But lately, the last couple of years, it's been all on the left side. Yep. So
I know.
I'm sure the conversations
there's so
between
many
those
different ways that this could go. That's why I think it's so intriguing to kind of see how they're going to. Because if you're trying to find the best five, I think if you're laying out the best five and they're all healthy, let's say they're all healthy, I think Bainuvalu, Kirkland, Fa'utanu, probably Luciano, and either Kern or Mateo Mele are your guys. Yeah. If Mateo Mele is one of your guys, and Kirkland is one of your guys, then maybe you leave those guys outside because Mateo Mele is probably more of a tackle than a guard.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think those are probably your top five guys right there. Is Bainuvalu and Fa'utanu probably at the guards, Kirkland and Mateo Mele at the tackles, and then Luciano at the center. But I don't know. I don't know how they mix and match it.
I was saying, you're gonna take a 2-year starter with Kern and say he's not one of your top five guys? And this is the thing.
I'm just saying. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
You've started to unravel this ball of spaghetti that I didn't even think about.
Yeah.
And now I'm really getting to the point where my mind is blown because I could conceivably think of a situation where the only guy whose spot at the end of spring would be solidified in my mind is Corey Luciano.
Yeah, me too.
And that, I mean, if you would have told me that at the beginning of spring, I would have said, you are outside of your mind.
Uh-huh.
There's just no way.
I know.
So
a lot of different things that could happen with that group.
Yeah, that's pretty
gonna
crazy.
It's going to be a weird group to watch here over the next week as we go through the. I think it'll probably, as long as there's no injuries, knock on wood, it'll probably look the same as we've seen it all spring. But fall camp starting August, it could look completely different. And we've seen that before. I remember when Mike Denbrock was the O-line coach, and we've seen it before where this one group practiced, and I think Chris Strouser did it too. This group practices together, and then the first game, completely different than what we had seen practice.
Yeah, pull the flim-flam.
Yeah, I think they did it on purpose.
The three-card money. Yeah. No, for sure.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Let's jump to the receivers, because that was one of the other groups that DeBoer really singled out. He was asked about. He made a point of saying Jalen Polk really stepped up during their scrimmage point
today.
Sounds
like he's had a really good couple of weeks.
He made it kind of characterize Jalen Poole, he calls him JP.
Yeah.
He characterizes him as a guy that may be a real third down dependable guy.
Yeah.
Like a true possession guy.
Yeah.
Like a guy that
work inside the hashes.
He's going to get open. Like that, yeah. The quarterback's going to find him no matter what. He could be the first progression. He could be the third guy. Uh-huh. But he knows that no matter where he is in the tree, he's going to find him.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I should have asked you. I'm not sure if I saw Jalen McMillan out there today. Did you see him? Because he wasn't out there on Wednesday.
Jalen McMillan. Oh, I saw him out there today.
Yeah.
But he was not doing the 11-on-11.
Again, another guy in limbo.
He was not in any install or anything like that.
Yeah, not sure if he's sick or anything like that. But Polk was clearly the guy that he saw stand out.
Yeah, Polk, O'Dunsey, and Giles Jackson were the three that were running with
when they came out in the first. Yeah, the five scrimmage plays that we saw, those were the three guys that came out for sure.
So,
And
Dylan Morris was the quarterback, by the way.
I couldn't be happier for a guy like Jalen Polk. I mean, for a guy who literally got hurt the very first play.
First catch
at Washington gets hurt.
Yeah.
Granted, he came back and had big plays against Colorado and had a couple big plays in the Apple Cup. But
what is scary? He had the longest touchdown against Colorado.
Yeah.
I think it was, I could be wrong, it might have been second longest, but I think it was the longest play from scrimmage.
Yeah.
All season long.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, it really should never.
And he only
come
played
to
in
that.
Three games.
Yeah.
So,
was there anything else about the receivers outside of him that he really mentioned? Because
on Polk. He said Giles Jackson a little bit has been a guy that they can use in a lot of different ways. I mean, we've talked about the fact that he was getting some carries out of the backfield every now and then, and that kind of stuff. But, I think that's kind of all he really talked about. He didn't. He just went really in depth on Polk a little bit.
Moving to the backfield, we talk about the quarterback. We can talk about the quarterbacks all day long. We have, but let's focus a little bit more.
I don't think we need to talk much about.
But you brought up the running backs, and we need to talk about them. Hopefully, people got a chance to see the quotes from Lee Marks on the profile that we did on Wayne Taulapapa and Will Nixon. Great, great stuff from him. And I specifically asked DeBoer today about it. It's like, was it just a happy accident, or did you guys really have an understanding coming into spring of just how frail the group was going to be? Because you literally only have two scholarship guys that are running between Aaron Dumas and JV on Sunday. Because now even the walk-on, Gabe Nelson, he was in yellow today. And obviously we haven't seen really all that much active in terms of Sam Adams. He's been out there. He's been practicing. But half the time he's been in yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he just said, I don't think he gave up too much about it, so I don't want to read too much into it. But man, he certainly seemed to intimate that it wasn't just a Mecca Megwa that's really going to struggle to come back and be 100% healthy for fall. It could be numerous guys.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speculate, but clearly everyone knows the names that are already out.
Yeah, and there's one guy who's dealt with injuries basically since he's been here, and that's Richard Newton.
Yeah.
And so that's the guy that I fear could be. I think he's such a dynamic guy when he's healthy.
Yeah.
I think he can be such a special player. But
and this is the worst case scenario too, because everyone understands the portal is just part and parcel of the college football experience now, and everyone has that one time free chance they can go and reinvent themselves or go to a place where they know they can play. I think a lot of fans were sitting there going, with all these guys coming in, there's going to have to be some attrition. Well, I think we all assume the attrition was just going to be via the portal. They're going to go somewhere else. They're going to have a chance to reinvent themselves or have a different slant on things. But now I'm starting to feel that maybe we might see some retirements in our future. And
or at the very least, guys who just aren't going to play this year.
Yeah, and again, I said, I really don't want to talk out of turn. I don't want to jump five steps ahead. But just based on what DeBoer said today, it's not hard to start to think about some of the futures of some of these guys that we haven't seen much, if at all, this spring.
And for those who might be getting concerned now, we are not hearing anything on the back end that DeBoer is hinting at that makes us say these things. It's more just, okay, the way he talked today, it sounded like there's going to be some guys who might not be available at all this year.
And it's just the numbers. So, I mean, the numbers bear it out. It's like you literally had signed three players from the transfer portal. And again, setting up a position group that already
had a lot of people.
If we had set up a hypothetical with Husky fans, knowing you've got Richard Newton. You've got Javion Sunday. You've got Cameron Davis. You've got
Caleb Berry.
Caleb Berry. You've got Emeka Megwa. You've got all these guys.
By the way, Berry was out there again.
Yeah, and Caleb Berry might be one of the guys that's still kind of rounding in, but he's at least been around a little bit. If all those guys out there, Sam Adams, you have that entire room, you would have thought of almost all the position groups that Kalen DeBoer and the new staff would have said, man, this group is loaded. This group has bodies. They're talented. Four-star guys. Everything's good to go. You would have thought running back, right? Mm-hmm. They have literally signed three guys out of the portal to add to the running backs room. Mm-hmm. That thing has turned into such a paper tiger. That whole entire room, it's absolutely stunning to me how the fortunes have turned in that room like 180 degrees. It went from a room that looked like it was stacked and you just bring in one guy after another and you just bury, to now all of a sudden being like, I don't know if any of those guys are going to play.
I really
wonder if those guys are going to play.
I know there's part of me that thinks that the three transfers, Talapapa, Aaron Dumas, and
Will Nixon,
will be the guys who get up most of the carries this year.
You wouldn't think they'd sign to come and sit.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as Patrick O'Brien didn't want to come to play to sit.
Granted, Will Nixon's going to have 4 years.
And he's also a different kind. He's like a Josh Jackson kind of guy.
Yeah, he'll have 4 seasons available to him. Yeah. Whereas Talapapa will just have one.
Yeah.
And Aaron Dumas has at least 2 more, if not 3 more years to play. So, yeah.
I think he's got 2 more because I think he was a true freshman last year.
Yes, so he's got 3 more.
Yeah, so he missed the COVID year.
Yeah, so he's got 3 more.
Yeah, including this year.
Including this year. Yeah. And but if he's good enough, he could go pro after two seasons. So, yeah, I have no idea what to expect from the running back room right now.
And the thing is, my fear isn't so much that they aren't going to be able to transfer and stuff, because I know all the Washington fans are like, we don't ever want guys, you know. But you have to understand, attrition is part of the game.
Yeah.
If you as a fan, you got to understand, guys come and go. That's part of the reason most people love college football, is because there's always new blood in and out all the time. What I'm afraid of, and what would scare me, is the fact that these guys aren't going to even maybe get an opportunity to show themselves at another place.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You hope that at least they have a good career somewhere else. They made the right decision for themselves. They did the right thing. And now you're like, what happens if they don't even get that opportunity?
Yeah.
That's what would worry me. Mm-hmm. Because I would want to see good things happen to those guys, because Richard Newton, solid earth guy. Cam Davis, great guy. These guys are all great guys. You want to see them succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And if it isn't at Washington, you'd like to see them succeed somewhere
else.
Yeah,
it's like, so be it. That's fine.
It's like Pitt fans thinking about Cam Bright. They're like, you know.
Everybody's worried about these guys transferring out. And I'm like, look, if these guys aren't going to be fully bought into the program.
Yeah.
Or
if, can't be.
Or if the coaches tell them, you're never going to play here. I'm not saying they're saying this, but you're never going to play here. Go find a place that you can go.
Yeah.
And you want that attrition. I mean, it's addition by subtraction, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean, if they're not ready to buy in fully to the program, and maybe they would have played here, but they aren't willing to buy into the program, you don't want that in the locker room.
But that's also a fundamental part of the process when you're going through culture change.
Yeah, but if they're not going to play, if the coaches have determined you're never going to play here, that's I don't want to call it a waste of a scholarship, but for the team, if you could bring in somebody else who will contribute to the team, then you want that open scholarship.
Right.
So I think attrition, as much as, you know, the problem is the people on our board that are all talking about it are people who are used to there not being a transfer portal.
Right.
And you never wanted to see attrition because you couldn't just go out and pick up someone.
Right.
Right?
Well,
but now you can.
And also, like, the last 5, 6, 7 years, when you've dealt with, like, a Chris Peterson, what have you, you've dealt with a guy who has really prided himself on picking the right guys the first time. So you don't have to worry about making that mistake. You pick the right guys the first time. They stick with you. They're high-character kids. They're gonna go through maybe some highs and some lows, but they're gonna understand. They're learning along the way, and they've made the right decision.
And now is where you talk about fit, in the program, more than you talk about necessarily the most athletic player,
right?
And because if you don't have a guy, let's say you go out and I've got a 5-star and a high-end 3-star guy, right? The 5-star guy is a surefire NFL guy, right?
Yep.
Because from a talent standpoint. But is his head there? Is his head willing to buy into the program? A high 3-star who's willing to buy into the program and wait a couple years could still turn into an NFL guy.
Yeah.
Like the five-star, and he wasn't bad in your locker room. He wasn't a guy who was ready to go after 3 years that you now have to replace. He's a guy who is going to be there a full 4 or 5 years, and you're going to get the most out of that guy. And a five-star who's 20 or a three-star who's 22, you know, it's like Don James with the, I don't.
Yeah, the best play, the best time to play freshmen is when they're seniors.
Yeah, kind of thing. Or, yeah, when they've been here a few years. And so it's really navigating, because you some five-stars aren't head cases.
Right.
Some five-stars come in and they work hard and they've got the talent and they pick things up and they're gone in 3 years because they're so good.
Right.
But then you have some five-stars who are just like, tell me how much I can make on NIL. And I don't care about your football stuff. I don't care if I fit in your system. What
can you do for me now?
What can you do for me right now?
Yeah.
Those are the guys that Washington and probably 90% of the schools are going to pass on. And the ones who don't pass on them are either going to be places like Ohio State where, because, and I hate to, we're getting way off topic here, but when Kentucky does a lot, and Duke were doing a lot of one and dones in basketball, right? Yeah. But a school like Washington might be able to get a one and done every once in a while, but now you're replacing that guy. Instead of replacing him with another one and done, you're replacing him with a guy who's going to need to be there 3 or 4 years, right? Whereas Kentucky and Duke are just continuing to...
Well,
but and so that's where Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma are, where they can take those guys, those one and done, or not one and dones, but those high NIL guys, and... You can replace him with another high-end one NIL guy, whereas Washington might not be able to do that.
Well, and then
I hope that made sense.
Right, but if we're going to use Kentucky and Duke to start to go down the rabbit hole a little bit, I promise this is as far as we go. Kentucky, just they're one of their top guys, Oscar Tshiebwe, he is now going to come back to Kentucky because the NIL deal is so good
and
that he doesn't even have to. And this is a guy with a potential lottery pick. I mean, this is a guy who... He's got millions and millions in his pocket anytime he wants it, but yet he would rather go back and have the college experience and still get his millions or whatever he's going to get, and then he can wait another year before going back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we're starting to get to the point where it's not just 1 year NIL deals that we would be dealing with. It's multiple year.
Yeah.
It's long-standing agreements
and,
that you know, because with Washington – The whole Molly Futures and all that stuff was talking about, you know, they're going to try to get them in the short term, but they want to get them set up with some of these corporate things for the longer term. Well, now you're starting to see that in action, but you're starting to see it at a very high level
and
with a lot of money involved.
One of the very minor benefits of this NIL thing for the program is that if a guy see, because in the NFL and in NBA, and in Major League Baseball even, but it's totally different on the college side of baseball. Yeah. But you've got, they're slotted and they can only make a certain amount.
Yep. Yeah, rookie contracts.
Yeah, rookie contracts are completely different in NFL and NBA nowadays than they were 10, 15 years ago.
And then even in baseball, you've got a lot of club control.
Yeah, exactly.
Not quite to the extent in the NFL, but in baseball, you've got five, 6 years.
You could actually see guys stay longer, and that's better for the sport of college basketball and college football.
If the model is sustainable.
Yeah, and which I don't think is possible.
We go back to Nick Saban's comments about it not being
not
sustainable.
But if guys are staying a little bit longer because they don't have to go out and cash in on the quick payday, then that's better for the sport. But
the irony is it's because they're already cashing in on the quick payday.
Which could kill the sport. So who knows? You know, we'll see.
It's on a knife edge. But to round this all the way back to the running backs, it's really kind of easy to say right now that particular group is a mess.
It is,
and it's of no one's doing. It's injuries. Mm-hmm. It's guys not being healthy. It's trying to bring in a guy like Aaron Dumas and get
fits
him ready
in the system.
Right?
Can these guys catch out of the backfield? One of the struggles for JV on Sunday has been him catching the ball.
And one of the questions that was asked today, a good question to DeBoer, was, you know, none of your running backs caught a touchdown last year. Mm-hmm. None of them. Wasn't your system, but none of the running backs last year at Washington caught a touchdown. Do you expect that to change? He's like, yeah, of course.
Well, and he said, I don't expect my running backs to lead the team in receiving or to lead it in yardage. But he goes, those guys should be third or fourth.
Yeah, top three, top four minimum.
Yeah, and just because we're dumping it off, we're using them in different ways and things like that. No, it's much more about getting the running back the ball in space and letting him do his thing, whereas – you know, wide receivers need to run down the field, catch the ball. They might not be as jitterbug as a running back might be in space.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, we did have some different topics there. We hopefully wrap that up a little bit, and I'll talk a little bit more about it in the description. Do you have any final thoughts about today's day 11? Because DeBoer kind of laid it out. He goes, so we'll have the practice on Saturday, which will be a full 2-hour practice, kind of what you guys see. No full pads. It'll be shells and shorts. And then they'll have two more practices, one on Tuesday, one on Thursday. And he said the one on Thursday is going to be light. Mm-hmm. Like, he made it sound like it was almost going to be like a typical Thursday
or Friday walk-through
before a game type of thing. And then, obviously, the spring game on Saturday. So is there anything else that you want to talk about before wrapping this up, Scott?
Not a lot. You know, I mean, I still find it interesting that Owen Prentice was taking some snaps. And this is where the quarterbacks are just getting the snap from the center and things like that. And he was snapping. And so I think Owen Prentice is a guy they're grooming as another center prospect for them. And we've talked about it before on the podcast that Scott Huff wants four or five guys every year that he can count on to throw in there.
Yeah.
If they need, if your center starts getting hurt, you got to have guys who can do it. And from what I've seen, he looks pretty good, but he's not doing the 350-pound defensive tackle right over his face, right? So who
Welcome
knows?
Welcome, MJ Ale.
But that's what we've seen, and I think that's kind of important to, because he was a guy who was recruited initially to play center eventually.
Sure.
But I didn't know if that was going to be the case with the new staff. I didn't know. Granted, it's Scott Huff still, but maybe Coach Krebs says, yeah, he's going to be a guard. But that isn't the case. He's playing center right now.
Right. The one thing, obviously, I want to let people know about today, other than the five plays that we got to see of the scrimmage, a lot of special teams work. We've seen I don't know about you, how you'd characterize it, Scott, but I feel like they've ramped up more of the special teams work as we've gone along.
I think they do it for us.
But, well, and that could be, that could very well be. That's our little pet media theory. But the one thing I've actually been surprised is we literally have not seen any of the kickers.
Nope.
Have not seen Peyton Henry take one
kick
at all this spring.
Yep.
And very few punts. Very few punts.
He's usually off doing his thing with Jalen Green.
But seeing Kevin Ryan and seeing Jack McAllister, we've seen them. I think I literally have seen them maybe one period all spring and watching Ryan kick left-footed and then watch McAllister kick right-footed. That's been about it. It's all been about return and cover.
Yeah.
And I thought that's been really interesting. I mean, because they were doing a lot of gunner drills today. Which I thought was kind of interesting.
And they were doing the max protect because they were backed up into the end zone.
Yeah. So, I mean, they really are working a lot of situations on the special teams. But I did find it interesting that we still haven't really seen. And it's not like we don't know what Peyton Henry's all about.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what he's all about. But it's still funny that we have not even seen one kick they scored a touchdown. Well, let's line
I'm
up.
I'm trying and see to what think,
they,
yeah.
I haven't seen
I haven't
one.
I haven't seen it. My guess is they're doing a lot of those in – Jacoby Covington had a blocked field goal last week, last Friday. So they are doing it at least a little bit.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, so we're going to wrap this thing up. One thing I do want to remind people that if you're new to listening to the podcast, we also want to encourage you to subscribe to our daily newsletter, our digest. All you have to do is send an email to huskystadium@gmail.com. That's huskystadium, one word, @gmail.com. And just put in the subject line of the email, put in newsletter, and ship it to us. We'll put you on our mailing list. And we usually put out at least one or two digests every day via email to get you up to date on all the latest breaking news, information on these podcasts, daily practice reports for spring. Obviously, fall camp will be doing the same thing. So, you know, that's a great way to stay in touch and keep up to date on what the latest is going on over here at Mott Lake. So to wrap things up, for Scott Eklund, this is Chris Fetters of DogMan.com. Go Dogs!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.